Welcome to episode 2 of the Marion Vermeijzen podcast. I'm Marion Vermeijzen. It's been over a month since I recorded episode 1 of this show. Since then, I've purchased some new equipment in an effort to try and improve the quality of the show, and I'm really enjoying learning all about podcasting and sound technology. As I said in show 1, my goal with this podcast is to have interesting conversations with interesting people. So today I'm interviewing Shannon Brown. She is a mother, a legal assistant, a dancer, and a philosopher. She has philosophy and French degrees from Whittier College, and she is also my daughter. Shannon, thank you for agreeing to help me create this podcast and talk with me today.
No problem.
So Aiden, my grandson, and your son is almost 3. I think he's the smartest kid in the world, and of course I am not biased. But what amazing things has he done and said lately?
He tells me what we're doing and when and how it's going to be done. The other day he was talking to me and his dad, and he said, "Mommy has pretty eyes, and Daddy has big lips." And Daddy wasn't too fond of that, since he used to get teased about that a lot as a kid. He thought that was maybe a fed answer, but it really wasn't. It was just a keen observation, and it's a beautiful thing about kids this age. They have no problem with their filters. They speak what's on their mind.
And you were telling me earlier that he doesn't necessarily get the giving birthday gift thing. Do you think he'll be able to give the birthday gift you bought today?
Yes. He was very good at picking. I let him do all of the picking out today. I personally did not like the shirt that we picked, but I was told very forcefully that that was the one that we were going to pick.
And why did he like it?
Because it had a potato. He likes potato head.
Mm.
Nothing else. I tried to offer many options. No, I hate that.
That's what he said.
Oh. We're working on not using that word. We don't like that word too much, but, you know.
So recently, Aiden was diagnosed with nephrotic syndrome. How's he doing?
He's doing well. I think the best thing about this is that he doesn't know that he's sick, which is probably the most important thing, that he can continue to live a normal life as a normal child. It's a little more stress and worry in our lives, but he seems to be responding really well, and we have another appointment coming up this week, so we'll get an update from our doctor.
Can you kind of explain a little bit about what nephrotic syndrome is and how he's being treated?
So I don't want to get too technical, but basically nephrotic syndrome is defined by proteinuria, which is protein that's leaking from the kidneys into the urine. And the protein that is leaking does a lot of things for your body, including taking water from your tissues. It balances your cholesterol, your blood pressure, and various other things. So when that protein leaks, it causes all these problems. And there are two different diagnoses for it. One is called minimal change disease, which is the most common for kids his age. They usually get diagnosed between ages 1.5 and 5, and they happen most commonly in boys. And it's basically just an inflammation of the kidneys that they think is caused by an autoimmune disorder. Some white blood cells are causing this inflammation, and it's treated using prednisone or any other immune suppressant drugs, and he's responding well to the prednisone right now. It's not our most favorable choice of medications, as it's really got a lot of side effects in itself, being a steroid. Not to mention the fact that steroids give you a lot of energy, which, Lord knows, any 2.5-year-old boy, the last thing that they need is more energy. But he's responding well, which is a good sign. It means that he probably does have the diagnosis of minimal change disease, which is fairly easily treatable, and he should grow out of by the time he's about 10. So that's good.
So you mentioned the extra energy. Have you had any other side effects?
Well, they say, you know, that steroids can give them mood swings. If anything, we've noticed he's actually been maybe a better mood. Not that he's a particularly ornery child. In fact, we've really praised the fact that we haven't really dealt with the terrible twos. But Now, you know, when I used to drop them off at daycare, it would be, hi, bye, I'm gone, you know, not a second thought. Whereas now, usually when I leave, I need a hug and a kiss. Aww. He tells everybody when he leaves, I need a hug and a kiss. And much more, I need to cuddle.
Oh, my.
So, I can't complain.
So he hasn't had the anger or that kind of stuff?
No, we haven't dealt with a lot of angry outbursts, which is really good. So.
Oh, that's great. Now, how are you doing? How is the treatment and the whole thing affected you?
It's very interesting how you can go from knowing absolutely nothing about something, I had never even heard of this disease before now, to becoming somewhat of an expert. We've only been dealing with this for just about 6 weeks. He'll be done with his first round of treatment this week, and I feel like I know everything about the kidneys and how they work and all the different words that go with it, and I feel a lot more knowledgeable than I did at the beginning, which makes it a lot less scary because you have a better idea of the questions to ask, you have a better idea of what to expect and what the symptoms are, what's common and what's not. I've gotten on a website that's got kind of a support group of other people that are dealing with this disease, which is really good because they'll post blogs and bulletins and that kind of thing where people can ask questions, get feedback from other parents who are dealing with the same thing, which I think is really good. And it's been difficult, and it's a long road ahead. We've got at least another 8 to 10 years dealing with this disease, but I try to remind myself, although it's a lot easier said than done, that it could be a lot worse. You know, he could have cancer or, you know, heart problems. He could be in a lot worse state. And again, the fact that he is happy and doesn't know that he is sick is probably the greatest blessing of all.
So what's the website?
That is www.nephcure.com. It's okay. NEPHCURE.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes, too. What's that? Do you have any advice for other parents who might find themselves with a diagnosis like this?
I think it's really taking it one day at a time and trying to not overload yourself with the big picture. I've done a lot of research, and you know, one of the first things that we did when looking up is looking at all the causes that nephrotic syndrome can come from. I mean, it could be diabetes, it could be lupus, it could be another disease that these children get diagnosed with in which they'll end up in renal failure. I mean, there's so many different causes of this problem, but the more you worry and the more that you kind of overload yourself in that way, the less useful you become to your children. I think that probably the best thing is to keep treating them as normal as possible. That, you know, the less they know about, if they don't feel sick, don't treat them sick, because they should get every opportunity to lead as normal a life as possible. And unfortunately, maybe not at this age, but as they get older, kids can be really mean and can be really exclusive. And, you know, if you make them separate or different from the rest, it can make it really hard on them. And so I think just trying to treat them normally and let them live as much of a normal life as possible, and really taking it one day at a time. Don't be afraid to ask questions, but also don't spend every minute of every day worrying about the worst possible outcome.
Right.
Until it gets to that point, don't worry about it. And that's what our doctor has said from the beginning. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So.
And you're happy with the doctor?
I am. I think he's really great. He's been really communicative. And one thing that we really love about him is that from the beginning, he hasn't just told us. He has tried to teach us. He's given us handouts and printouts, and instead when we have questions, he'll ask us to try and answer our own questions based on the knowledge he's given us. He really wants us to be armed, because we are the ones that have to deal with this and treat it on a daily basis and make those decisions. And so, you know, being knowledgeable is really important. So.
That's awesome. Now, you've recently gone through a job search, and it's certainly in the worst economy in your lifetime. What advice do you have for people who are looking for a job right now?
don't give up. I spent 6 months looking for a job, and I felt ready to give up. Of course, you can never, and I think that it's tough, and you just have to keep doing everything you can. You network, you get your name out there, you know, you ask around, and maybe be a little more willing to reach outside the boundaries that you normally would as far as a job. You can't be as picky maybe these days. I had never considered taking a job in San Francisco before. I just thought the commute was too long and too difficult and too much for me and for my family situation. But I also realized that, you know, the job market in San Jose wasn't what I needed and wasn't producing any kind of results. And so I gave it a shot, and I applied to a job that was actually really right up my alley, and I got it. And, you know, after 6 months, I started my new job the week that my unemployment ended, so I really couldn't have asked for better timing, and it's worked out really well. I've actually really enjoyed it. So
just explain a little bit about the new job and what you're doing.
I work as a legal secretary for a defense workers' compensation law firm. So we work for the employers and insurance companies on workers' compensation issues. And I think that a lot of times we're the people that get the bad raps. People think that we're out to, I don't know, screw the applicant or the employee, if you will. And really, that's not our job. Basically, we don't handle a case. It doesn't come to us unless there is a question of credibility or the case is really just too complicated to be handled without the need for the legal agenda. If the person is in need of medical care and in need of financial assistance, we do everything in our power to try to get them what they need and the right amount, but we're also there to monitor and regulate and make sure that those people who are maybe taking advantage of the system don't get away with it, because the more they take advantage of it, the more difficult it's going to be for everybody else out there who really does deserve that help to get it. Mm-hmm. And it makes it more difficult, makes the premiums go up, and it affects everybody. And, you know, we're really just there to protect everybody's interests. Right, right. So
has working in a law firm made you more or less interested in maybe someday going into a legal field as an attorney?
Both. I knew, but I don't think that I ever really realized on such a personal level the time commitment that it takes. You know, not only is there law school and the numerous hours that you spend studying for that and then studying for the bar, but you really don't ever get time off when you're an attorney. There's no such thing, because time is money and you have to bill, and the only way that you make money is by billing hours and working hours. And our attorneys will come in early, they stay late, they work on weekends. I had an attorney, attorney that I work with was just on vacation for a week. He called me from the airport on his way home to ask about what new mail he had coming in so that he could dictate on it. I mean, they really never stop. And in that respect, it does make me question whether that's a field I want to get into, since I do already have a family and I want to be able to enjoy that time and spend that time being able to watch my son grow up, and hopefully someday expanding that family. But I also find it a really, really interesting job. It's something that I'm passionate about, and I really enjoy it, and could really see myself being able to do for a long time and
that's
love it.
Cool.
So
that's really cool.
Little okay. of both.
So you've got a lot going on in your life. How long is your commute each way now?
Well, the train is about 45 minutes, plus it's about a 15-minute drive to the train station and then a 10-minute bus ride. So it comes out to about an hour and 10 to an hour and a half each way.
So how do you manage to stay on top of everything you've got going on between raising Aiden and work and everything else that you've got going on in your life?
I like to plan and organize. I love my iPhone because it's got a calendar on it, probably the equivalent of most people's Blackberries and that kind of stuff. I never was the type of person to carry around a little calendar before, so to have something where I can actually write down all my appointments and social engagements and all those kind of things and really be able to keep track of them and know what I've got coming up and know what I can handle and being able to, you know, say no when I need to, I think is really important. And planning ahead, I am a firm believer in list making. I love lists. I think they're great because if it's out on paper, it's not in your head, because I'm the type of person that will worry and I'm forgetful. And if I don't write it down, I'm constantly having to remind myself or make sure I don't forget things, and it can get really stressful. Plus, I think the satisfaction of being able to cross things off a list, no matter how small they are, is amazing. It makes you feel really good when you've got a list completed, and I'm the type of person that I can't sit down and relax and really enjoy myself until I've gotten everything done. If it means spending an hour and a half when I get home each night doing the cleaning and folding and getting ready for the next day, I would much prefer that than sitting down and relaxing first and having to get up and do it later.
You've always been a list person, haven't you?
I am a list person. I always have been.
That's running the family.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you've been skydiving twice in the last few months, even if it makes your mother nervous. But can you explain a little bit about how it works and why you like it?
I'm getting you up there one of these days.
No way.
Oh,
ever.
Yes, I
no.
am. Oh, I am. Don't you worry. It's exhilarating, and it definitely gives you a new perspective on things. You know, I mean, anybody that's been up in an airplane, you've gotten that bird's eye view before, but to really be complete, just outside and enjoying. I mean, what people don't realize is, one, the free fall part is pretty short. It's only about a minute long. So, you know, you don't have a lot of time to really freak out about it, and it all happens so fast. You get up in the plane, they get you in, get you out, and you don't really have a lot of time to stress out about
it. Now you're with somebody. You're not
yes,
doing,
yeah. It's tandem. So you don't really have to do anything except enjoy yourself. And actually, the first time that we did it was a night skydive, which was really dangerous. They weren't really supposed to let us up, but they were trying to fit us in at the very end of the day. So it was probably a very different experience than most people do experience going skydiving. I mean, there was barely a little bit of pink left on the horizon.
Yeah.
We had to have a spotlight on the runway, and we thought it was really fun. I don't think our instructors enjoyed it very much, but it was beautiful and amazing, and I think that it made the second time that much more fun because it was in the daytime, so I got to see what it kind of looks like to be able to see the whole landscape. But it doesn't give you that roller coaster feel. I think most people feel like they can't take roller coasters, so they wouldn't be able to handle skydiving. But it's really a different experience because you're falling at your own rate of speed, so you don't get that sensation of getting your stomach in your throat.
Yeah, but you have to get up your nerve before you jump?
You don't really have to do that. You don't have time is the thing, and you don't really have a choice. You know, you're in the plane, and then they open the door, and you're strapped in, and they just start shooting you out. You scoot to the end, you go 1, 2, 3, and you don't have any power. It is not up to you to do the jumping.
Huh.
All you have to do is follow along.
Is it expensive?
It's not too bad. I mean, I guess it everything's relative.
Right, that's what's important to you.
It's the place that we've gone is $100 for the whole thing, which from what I heard is actually fairly cheap.
Huh.
And then if you want to get photos or video taken, there's a little extra. But that includes everything, and I think for what it is, it's totally worth it.
Wow. So, when you were at Whittier, you majored in French and philosophy. Yeah. So, why'd you choose those majors?
French kind of fell in my lap. I had studied French in junior high and high school and really didn't like it. I had never done well. I never had a good background. I had not started on a good foundation. Really, I don't think any 12-year-old has a really strong, burning desire to learn a language. And so as the levels of the language progressed, I just didn't do well because I didn't have a firm grasp of the basics. So when I got to college, I had this long, burning desire and passion to learn Italian and to visit Italy. I visited when I was 16, and I fell in love and always wanted to go back. But when I got to school and found out I didn't teach Italian, I thought, well, maybe I'll give French another try. It's better than starting all over with a new language. So I went back to the basics, and I took I went and took the very beginning level of French, and I did well, and was able to get off on a better start, and that kind of just led me into it. I had really wanted to study abroad while I was in college, and the opportunity came up. I had a really great French teacher who became my mentor, and she really pushed me and encouraged me to take the opportunity. So I applied for the study abroad program and was accepted, and went and had an incredible experience in Paris for 6 months. Highs and lows. I think that I definitely experienced homesickness and a little culture shock, but I would never give up that experience in the whole world. I loved it. I loved it's just such a completely different atmosphere over there. The ability to travel is so much easier. It's, you know, countries are smaller. It's easier to get around, and their public transportation system, their food. I mean, I could go on for days about that experience and how enriching it was for me. And philosophy, really, I had never really thought about it, and I just took one philosophy class that was taught by my freshman writing seminar teacher. She was in the philosophy department, and I took the class, and I did really well, and she thought that I had an aptitude for it and encouraged me to take some more classes, and I really just found it fascinating. I find it a mind trip. That's the only way that I can explain it, is it makes you question anything and everything that you've ever learned. And I loved being able to walk out of class just being like, wow, like, whoa. I mean, it's just, it's fun to me. Oh, it's cool. Really, really amazing. That's, I love great. Philosophy.
Now, I suppose they're not there. I think I asked your sister this, but they're not the most, French and philosophy wouldn't be the most marketable majors. If you had to teach you over again, would you do it with the same majors, or would you major in something more practical?
No. I had thought about majoring in poli-sci, because from an early time on, I thought I had wanted to go to law school and thought that poli-sci was the way to go for that. But I learned as time progressed that as many universities, undergrad and graduate school, are doing these days, because the competition is so tough. They're really looking to branch out and get a wider variety of people from a wider background, and that it really is more about your writing skills and your grades, and philosophy is actually a really great major for law school. Just it's got the same kind of ideas and the way that you question things and form ideas. That does make you pretty marketable for that, and so that's something that I definitely took into consideration. And I think these days, people, at least for jobs, unless you're looking for a really specific job in a specific field, they don't care as much about what your major is. I've asked a lot of people that, you know, in the generation above me, you know, what they majored in, and a lot of people, it's really surprising to hear, their major had absolutely nothing to do with what they do now in their career. And I think that having that degree is more important these days than what you actually have your degree in.
So in your job search, you didn't get asked too much about school?
I think people are always interested to find out my major. I don't think that it was a make or break as far as getting jobs again. I think it was more having the bachelor's degree really is what.
Have you used your French at all?
Occasionally. My old job, when I was a receptionist at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, we would get people from all over the world that would come in. And so occasionally we would have French-speaking guests that would come in, or people that was their first language and spoke it. Better than other. So it was fun to be able to use that a little bit. My French, I think languages are definitely something that if you don't keep up practicing them on a regular basis, you lose them very quickly. And so
I think it'd come back pretty quick, though.
I think it would. I would love to have an opportunity, you know, take my son over there for a summer or do some kind of a immersion program, or, you know, go teach kindergarten in some small province there. I mean, something like that would be really awesome, and to be able to really master my my language. But I think it would take a couple classes to really freshen up on my language skills.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for agreeing to do this and be one of my first guinea pigs. I really appreciate it.
Second one, I'm a little offended.
Yes, but the new technology, this
first
should be
one.
A better quality podcast.
I see.
Thank you again, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That ends episode 2 of the Marian Vermeersen podcast. I really had fun talking with Shannon and continuing to learn by doing. After listening to my recording, I've decided that I do need to buy another new mic. I was using a very cheap mic, and the difference between Shan's mic and mine was noticeable. I really appreciate any and all feedback, so please put a comment on my blog or send email to marian.vermeersen@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.